We're recording now. My name is Philip Hoister. This is a second interview with Mr. Jack Horn. Our previous interview covered the years from being born to the age of 10. We intend to look closely at those years from, well, basically his teenage years, from 10, 11, 12 through to 19 and 20. But before we get on to that, our last interview concluded a bit prematurely, and a couple of stories you were telling me about various people. Perhaps if we just complete those, and then we can go on to your teenage years. You were telling me about a Mr. Pierce at Black Bob's, and a story about one day coming home and discovering something unsavoury at home. So I'll hand it over to you, Jack.
Yes, well, the Pierces lived at a place called Black Bob's, the other side of Ouse. And they were a couple of girls and a disfigured son, I suppose you would say. He was had a face like a half a dog, and he used to crawl around on his hands and knees, and with a rope round his body, and with a small sledge behind him, sledge and wood. He was I did see him. One time, the girls I seen, you'd see them and the rest of the Pierces quite often, because they used to go to gymkhanas at Ouse, and they'd walk along the road, one behind the other, and there'd be a string of them. And they used to dress in all the old coloured clothes they could dress in. They loved dressing in evening dresses in them days, I suppose you'd call them, down around their ankles. Those are the things they wore. And old Jackie Pierce, he caught his son, his eldest son, or his first son, having sex with his mother, so we shot him. But the story, but my old grandfather told me, and it'd have to be true, he said that he wasn't charged with it. So
he killed him?
Yes, he killed him, yeah.
Killed his own son?
Yeah.
And never went to jail for it? Never went to court?
Well, they told me he got out of it.
Good grief.
What
did he say about it at the time?
Well, I think it was, they brought it down that they were in, they were simple, you know. They didn't know any better. They were bred in, they lived in a hut. They went and fenced the land off of Shoebridge up at the other side of Ouse, and told him if he didn't give him the land, they'd burn him out. So they had a few acres there that they'd fenced off.
Yeah.
So they claimed it, one of them won at one of the Pierces. I was told they won Tats Lotto when it was £12,000 in them days, or something to that a figure.
Yeah.
But they used to come to Ouse, and they were heavy drinkers. And that they used to get drunk, and they'd king hit everyone in the hotel if they didn't watch them.
Everybody knew them in Ouse?
Oh, yes, they had a record, yes. And you'd see them at the gymkhanas at the Savoy stand, eating Savoys and the fat, with the tomato sauce running down their jaws all over their clothes. I tell you, they were funny.
When you told me the story previously, you said something about what he actually said when he came in and saw his son having sex with his wife. Do you remember that? Your grandfather must have told you that. He said something like, "Oh, bugger me, dear, you know, he's not allowed to do that." Or
yes, he said he wasn't. They told him that he weren't allowed to shoot him. He said, "You can't do that." He said, well, he was having sex with my wife and I, and with his mother, or to that effect, and So he shot him.
Now, how did Black Bob's get its name? Do you know?
Well, they looked dirty when they used to walk about, and they were unshaved and looked dirty. So I don't know whether they got the name. Someone gave them the name of Black Bob's, and it stuck to them.
So the Pierces you're talking about,
mm.
They were so dirty, they looked like black hairs.
Yeah, they were dark.
Yeah. And also, the name of Bothell, do you know where, what's the rumours about where that came from?
Well, there was a bloke by the name of Davis. He was the governor of Bothell. And
what, out here or back in?
No, here.
Yeah.
And his wife was back in Ireland. And they used to contact one another, and so she was having a child, and she sent him a telegram to tell him that the baby was born, and she had on it both well, so he joined it together and called it Bothwell.
Do you remember his name?
Davies was his name.
Davies.
Yeah, he was a sandstone home, which was still there to this day, and it's worth a lot of money, they tell me. And
where is it, sir?
That's built in Bothell, up behind the old jail.
He owned the property up there?
He owned the property. It was government land then. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's wraps up the stories that you were telling from the first interview we did. Now, moving on to your teenage years, for most of your teenage years, where were you living? Where were you actually living for most of those teenage years?
Well, most of those teenage ages, I lived around Bothell, at Bothell. As I was going with Faye at the time, and I used to ride horses of a morning, track work, and go rabbiting, and so it was a full-time job as I worked as an apprenticeship, and then weekends I'd trap rabbits, so there was no let up, and then you know it was a novelty to go to a dance or the picture show come every fortnight.
Yep. Well, let's just go back to the beginning. You moved to Great Lakes, and then you moved to a place called Gene Banks.
Yep.
When you were quite young, I gather.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about Gene Banks and what it was like? You lived in a hut, or did you live in a sandstone house? Or?
Well, we lived in a weatherboard house, and it was about a pretty big place, about a three-bedroom place, lounge, kitchen.
Yeah.
It was a farmhouse. There was a big old shearing shed there.
Why did you actually move there? Because your father got a job with...
He was working, trapping rabbits and doing work on the property. Mm-hmm. A bloke by the name of George Long owned it, and so he was the local skin buyer. So he worked for him,
what do you remember about living there? Was it a nice place, or?
Yeah, it wasn't. It was quite a comfortable place after living in where we were in the lakes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a reasonably good road into it where we could get to Bothwell, and if you know, it was a gravel road, so it was pretty good.
Yep.
There was only two homes on the there was another property next door, and people lived there, and we quite often had visitors, which was
rare.
Hmm?
Was that rare?
Yes. Well, we never had anyone. Only one you'd see. And when we lived in them other places, where the skin buyers or rabbit buyers, you wouldn't see anyone. You'd see a few. In the early days, during the depression, you'd see people out walking, looking for jobs and food and things like that. They'd knock on your door and ask for, could they get some money, or could they get a feed and or a drink.
And so what would happen? Would they get one, or?
Oh, my mother would cook them a meal and
yeah.
and feed them. And
there's
she.
A swagman, are they?
Hmm?
There's a swagman?
Yes, and they was a lot of them were well educated people. They were doctors and they had no work, so they just walked the road looking for work, and we'd quite often have a visit from those sort of people during Depression days. I can remember them coming to the place when I was only little,
yeah.
and asking for food, and could they chop some wood, and could they get some money, or things like that.
Did people trust them? Like,
well, they
weren't worried they'd steal something, or
no, they were pretty well trusted. They was quite. Well-educated people, and they spoke well, and they just said that they were walking the road, they looking for work, and they'd carry the swag, and could they, was there someone where they could put their swag down for the night, you know?
Yep. Did you talk to them much? Have much to do?
Oh yes, we talked to them while they were there, and we were only kids. We weren't allowed to sit round and talk to them. My mother and father were very strict like that. Where there was, when there was visitors, you was sent outside while the visitors were there, or things like that. And
seen but not heard.
Yes. So, I mean, it was. But they told the story, you know, you could see the hardship on them, you know, that,
yep.
and those sort of things. And I can remember that when I was only very small.
Well, yeah. It would have been. The Depression was from 29 to 33 or something?
Yes.
So you would have been 4 or 5 or
something? Yeah. Yes, it was.
So that's Gene Banks. You then moved from Gene Banks to a place called the Hermitage. Can you tell us a bit about the Hermitage?
Well,
why you moved there?
The Hermitage was only a four-room cottage, that was the only building on it.
Yep.
And that's where we. A skillion on the back of it, and things like that, but that's where we lived. And
how many of you were there, do you remember?
Well, yes, there was Nancy and Molly and myself and the my family, and then two of my stepsisters. They lived with us for a little while. And
and why did you move to the home? Did your father got a job there again?
Well, he got a job there as he got 25 shillings a week.
Yep.
and a half a sheep a fortnight. And it's
for doing what?
Trapping rabbits.
For trapping rabbits.
Mm-hmm. And so, harvesting, you might get a bit of work harvesting time.
Yeah.
But it was mainly to get the rabbits down, because the rabbits were very, they reckoned the story were they couldn't keep their sheep going if they didn't kill the rabbits.
So the hermitage had the main homestead.
Yes, it had a big homestead out on the highway, and we were about 12 mile in, I suppose, where we had to.
So were you ever allowed to go to the homesteads and go inside?
Oh, we used to go there. The Davies, strangely enough, was in charge.
Okay.
And Rolls, as they were in charge of the hermitage. And oh no, they'd invite you in for a couple, they were very nice people.
Yep, yep. And what do you remember about the inside of the place?
Oh, it was a big two-story place.
Yeah.
Beautifully built, partly built brick and sandstone and timber.
Yeah.
And it's there till this day, and it's in very good condition.
Built by convicts, or?
Built by the convicts, yes. And it was just the roadhouse from Watamana to from the Bothwell to the Great Lakes.
Is that what it was?
Well, they used to come out for all their stuff, because the truck used to pull up there with all their groceries and what have you. So that was a main link up with Watamana. There was a shop there at Watamana, but it was owned by Ellis's at Bothwell, and they used to cart their food and everything up backwards and forwards to up there. And then, of course, the people from out on the farms and whatever, they'd come to that point to get their food.
Yep. So most of these big properties, how do they make their money? What did they produce?
Well, they produce sheep and cattle, and that's how they made their money. They shore a lot of sheep. And
the rabbiting was really just to keep the rabbits down.
Yep, and they grew a lot of wheat and hay and oats and that sort of thing.
Yep. Did you work on, you know, like harvesting hay? Or did you ever work on the sheep or the cattle or anything like that?
I worked on harvesting.
Did you?
I used to go out, and helped my father link up the horses and with the binder and the plat and that, when he was cutting the hay and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the old chaff cutters had come in them days and cut it up what they wanted into chaff.
Yeah.
And
hard work.
Oh, very hard work.
Why was it hard work? What did you have to
very
do?
Hard on your back and your arms, lifting like the wheat, the sheaves and that.
You'd have to lift them onto what? Back of a tray?
Well, we used to put them onto the wagon. There was a wagon, had a wagon, and used to load the wagon with all these sheaves of hay, and you'd have it stacked up, you know, high, and then you get to the. And my father used to build the stacks of them.
Yep.
In them days, I used to help him build the, do the harvest and build the, you know, you turn the, on the, it was hard work on the top of the, when you were building the, when he was building the stacks, because you were walking on top of the, and that, and carrying them, the sheaves.
Yep.
It's very hard work. And
was there a skill in stacking sheaves or not? Or you just stack them one on top of the other, or was there a real skill to it?
Oh, it was skill to, you had to hit it and lock it in.
Okay.
Because if you didn't lock it in it wouldn't, you'd have to keep the rain off it, of course.
Yeah. How would you do that?
You put the sheaves away when you put the roofing on. You'd slope the roof, skillion the roof, whatever you was building, a round stack. You'd build a pointed round on it, and you'd have the sheaves away, one up, one down, and you'd lock it all in to right till you got to the very top, and so as the water could run off. And it was a lot of skill to do it. I mean, you had to know what you were doing. I've seen build people try and build them and they fall over. But my father, he was good at building. He built them like square ones, round ones, and it was hard work. My gee, it was hard work. I've had the blood running out of my hands and with a piece of bag on your hands. Picking up the sheaves, because you pick them up with the binder that had a string around the middle of them, and you'd pick them up with the string, and they were heavy, and of course they'd cut into your hands over the period of time.
Why didn't you wear gloves?
Well, there wasn't no gloves in them days.
Oh, God. Now, did you get paid for doing that, or?
Oh, well, when I worked, helped my father, I never got paid. I just hopped in and had to help him, and because he was, I don't know what, I think he only got a very small wage and by doing that, you know.
So that was one of the jobs you were doing as a teenager. Can you think of any others you were doing at the Hermitage or Gene Banks?
Oh, well, Hermitage, when we moved to the Hermitage, we had my father was linked up with he had a racehorse that he used to race, and we used to have to I'd have to ride that track work, and we had an old track on them we made up, and I used to ride that, and then he got another one, so we had a couple there, but we used to have to train, and so it was early morning at 5 o'clock in the morning till, as I said, till dark at night.
Hang on, we're racing ahead of ourselves a bit here. So did he start getting horses when you were a teenager?
Well, yes, we had horses when I was in Bothwell. Because there was a racetrack there, I used to go out of a morning and ride track work.
Yeah, okay, so let's say you've moved from the Hermitage to Bothwell.
We moved to Meachfield and then from there on into Bothwell.
Okay.
But he had a couple of horses there, and of course, and my wife, Amanda-B, her father had a couple of horses. Everyone had horses in them days, because there was no, I don't know why, because there was no, they used to get a, about £20 to win a race or that sort of thing. There was no money.
So these people, they were racing horses, presumably.
Yeah.
But now, before you answer that, why did you move into Bothwell? Why did your parents move into Bothwell?
Well, we moved from Meachfield to Bothwell because the rabbiting season had finished there.
Okay.
And so we had to look for other work, and of course we moved to Bothwell under. And that's to get work. And
And what work did your father get in Bothwell?
Well, he went shearing. He'd do fencing and all that sort of thing. You know, if someone would want a fence done, they'd get in touch with him. He'd do fencing, or
would you help him do that?
Yes, I'd help him fence, and then of course we'd go harvesting in them days, and then we'd work in the shearing shed, picking up, and it was pretty good money for kids, young fellas in them days, picking up.
You were roustabout.
Roustabout. I picked up for 8 years.
Was that hard work?
You had to run all day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, how the shearers treat you?
Oh, Well, some of them are trying a bit of fun with you, but I mean, you were aware of all that, you know. I mean, when we were.
There must have been some characters.
Oh, I met some characters, yes.
Yeah. Tell me about some of them.
Well, there was a bloke by the name of Basil Redden, as we mentioned earlier. He was a good shearer, Basil, and they all had a bit of fun with you, you know. I mean, they'd try and send you for a left-handed handpiece or a pistol guard or something like that.
A pistol guard, what's that?
A wrinkle stretcher.
A wrinkle stretcher?
Yeah.
There's no such thing. What about this George Medhurst character? Was he a shearer or...?
Yes, he used to do a bit of shearing with the blades, old George.
Yeah.
And he'd go out they'd give him work. He'd do fencing and rabbit trapping, and he had about 8 or 10 acres, but it was all stone, and there wasn't much grass on it. But he'd pinch a few sheep and put on it. But he was a character, George, and everyone knew him, so they never used to question his George. They would let him go ahead, and because he told the Campbells, they questioned him. He had a beast hanging on the gallows up in his yard, and they said, George, where'd you get that from? And when they checked the skin, they found the brand number on it, and George said, well, shook the mattress to him. He said, well, these make a big blaze, old fella. And he said, oh, that'll be all right, George, then you can have it, just give us the skin.
Now, you said earlier on he had a bag of possum skins or something.
Yes, used to catch possums out of season and have them ready for when they did come in season.
Yeah.
So... old Paul George Medhurst, he wanted a few dollars, so he decided he'd take he's over to George Long. He lived in over in Bothwell, and so he decided he'd carry the skins over on his back. So he had half a chaff bag full to take over, and he was going over the bridge, and Freeboth was one policeman on one end of the bridge, and just up a bit further there was. Another one. So Freeboth pulled him over, George, and he said, what do you got in the bag, George? And he said, bastard, would you like to get in with him? And he continued his track onwards, and Freeboth never said no more. He continued on and sold his possum skins. He was a character.
Yeah, well, we might talk more about some of the shearers when we get on to the period when you are an actual shearer yourself. So you started an apprenticeship at the age of 14. Can you tell me a bit, who was that with and why did you do it?
Well, I went with Noel Branch because I started that for the simple reason I was about 8 years old, and the old Pontiac we had, the timing chain broke in it.
Yeah.
And my father said, oh, the timing chain's gone, we was in the town, and he said, well, I can't afford to get it done, so we just have to leave it there. And so I said to my mother, I think I'll get a timing chain for the old car. And
yeah.
And she said, all right. So I had saved up a few dollars, and there was a bloke by the name of Charlie Wise. He was a bus driver. He had his own two buses on the road from Hobart to Bothwell. And he was a good mechanic, as well as being a bus driver. And I got on well with him. And so I went to him, and he said, I told him what I wanted. And he said, oh, well, I'll get you one in town. So I said, all right. So he got me one. And I said, now, what's involved in putting it in? And he told me, he said, now, you do got to do this. And you got to do this and that. And I said, all right. So I pulled it all apart, and with his help, I got it, put it back together, and I got it going.
This is the age of 8 or 9.
I'd be there around about that age.
Yeah.
And anyway, the only bit of trouble I had was doing the timing. And I went back to Charlie and I asked him how to time it. And he told me, he said, oh, look, you'll find a mark, turn the piston up until it comes to top dead centre, and you'll find a timing mark on the flywheel. And
yeah.
when you get to there, time it was about two or three marks before you get to the top dead centre. And anyway, I've done that and I've got it spot on.
So at a very young age, you're interested in cars.
So, yeah.
So you come back to Bothwell and you're about 14?
Yes.
And you went to apprenticeship with who, sorry?
A Branch, Noel Branch.
Noel
yeah.
Branch.
He so had
what did he have?
He had a big garage in the main town, in the town. And he done all sorts of work, as well as that. There was a bloke around the other, had another garage. But Noel done bulldozers, tractors, you name it, Noel done it. And so I went and worked for him as an apprentice. And, in them days we...
How much you get?
I got 12 shillings a week.
How many hours would you work?
From 7 in the morning till perhaps 6 or 7 at night.
7 in the morning?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, and it worked. And you might, it all depending, you might have a tractor to do for a local farmer, and he'd want it at such and such a time. So you'd work back at late at night to finish it, and those sort of things, and you were told, Noel would say, well, in the morning, when you come early, you start on this and you'd work on it then and right through till you finished it.
So during that period, how long did that last, that apprenticeship?
Well, the apprenticeship lasted 5 years.
So you worked from 14 to 19? Well,
I worked there at Noel's and then work slackened off. I went to Watamana and worked there.
Yeah.
And then
you came back to finish off your...
And then I'd come back and...
Okay, well, we're getting... Let's not race ahead too far. So, when you started work as an apprenticeship, you were working from 7 to 7, you can't have been doing much rabbiting or... Were you doing any work supporting your father at that time?
Yeah, well, we'd go home and skin rabbits and...
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh,
there was no, there wasn't much let off. You had always had something to do, and you needed the money. So you worked, whatever was...
So your 12 shillings, would you keep that yourself, or would you have to pay some food and
Well,
rent?
I used to give it to my mother. Then when I worked at Watamana, I got... £7.10 a fortnight, and I took it all home.
Okay, we'll talk about one bar in a minute. So, how long were you actually working in the garage before you had to move to Watamana?
Oh, I suppose I'd worked there for 12 or 18 months before I'd, and then we'd go to Wada for and worked there for in the fitter shop on the lathes and that until I was...
People listening to this would not have any idea as to what Watamana is. So tell me a little bit, it's a hydro development?
Well, it was a hydro scheme that supplied mainly the power to Tasmania. There was Taralea and Watamana was the main power station in them days, and that was the main thing, because that's when they built the Penstock Lagoon. They built a what would you call it? canal from the Great Lakes right round to Waitemata.
So what work did you do there? How did you get the job?
Well, I worked on the pipeline coming down the hill.
Did you?
They put the new pipeline in from the top of the Penstock Lagoon to Waitemata Power House.
So how did you put pipeline... and was there, how many people working on the scheme?
Oh, it was a lot of people worked at Waitemata in them days. Nearly all Bothwell worked there, plus a lot of people from Hobart and just about all around different parts of Tasmania.
And did you live on site? Did there, were there work?
Yes, there was.
Tell me a bit about that.
There was little huts, all one-man huts, or two-man huts, I beg your pardon. All the way around the Waitemata, like they built them.
Yeah.
And
what was inside?
There was only two beds, two bunks.
Yeah.
And a fireplace. Tin fireplace.
Cupboards?
No, there was no cupboard, no nothing. Only a nail behind the door or a nail on the wall to hang your few clothes, what you had.
Sheets, blankets.
Oh, you took all that with you, and...
What about food?
No, we had a cookhouse there, and cooked for we got £7.10, and they took your food out, you know. They had a big cookhouse.
Yeah.
And a big quarter, so as you could, with you go in and have your meals.
Yeah.
She was cold. We had everyone had a fire going, and of course they used to pinch your wood from the, they'd have it stacked out again their chimney, and when they'd go from one up to another and they'd grab a log of wood off your heap and take it. So Alan White, he was the powder monkey at Waitemata.
The what?
Powder monkey.
What's that?
Blowing the holes for the pipeline down the hill.
Yep, yep.
And he put a cap in the top of the wood, and to find out who was pinching his wood. So we're sitting in that this night and. Heard this awful bang, and there was the chimney missing, and old Brocky come out of the hut with a towel over his head, and soot and everything going everywhere, Alan White said, "I know who's taking the wood now." And Brocky said, "I just walked past old fellow and I took one log."
He took the wrong way.
He took the wrong log, yeah.
And he blew his head off.
And he blew the chimney out there. Oh,
was
yeah.
it hard work?
Oh, she was hard work on that hill.
Why is that?
Well, she was about over 3,000 feet drop from the top down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was operating that little railway line.
Yeah.
From the top of the Penstock Lagoon to the powerhouse.
Yeah.
And we had electric little trains set up on it.
Yeah.
And so you had earplugs, earphones on, and they might tell me to stop that truck at 27 Pier or whatever.
Yeah.
And you had to stop it with a load of concrete on it. Dead on, because if you went a fraction past it,
yeah,
you lost it. And so those are the sort of things you had to hang on. Then of course you had to push tip the truck sideways with a load of concrete in it,
yeah,
into the piers, and then you'd have to walk around it and ram it to get all the concrete in it, and you'd barrow it along a plank. When she was hard work holding a barrel load of concrete, wheeling along a plank,
And did you ever lose a truck or?
Lost plenty of truck on the side of the hill. And it'd go.
Let's just go over the edge.
Oh, down the, once they went, that was the end of it. They'd go right to the bottom because you couldn't.
And it happened more than once.
Oh yes, a lot of them was would tip them and lose them.
And anybody? Did you see anybody like? What about Oc Health and Safety? Was it dangerous work?
Oh, it was dangerous work on the side of that hill. If you fell, you in that bluestone, you know, it was dangerous.
Did you know of any men who did lose their lives, or?
Hmm?
Did you know of any men who might have lost their
lives? Oh well, there was plenty of them that fell there, and I know of one bloke fell in the pipeline and got washed into the Ouse River, but they got him. They had a net in there.
Yeah.
And
alive. Alive.
Yeah. But there was plenty of them, because in them days, they look for, you know, they'd say they fell over and got injured and all this sort of thing. And because it was, we had a bloke by the name of Sam Hooper. He was an American.
Yeah.
And oh, he was a hard man.
What did he do?
Oh yes, if you didn't do your day's work, he'd tell him to put the coat on. Yeah.
What's that mean?
Oh, they're finished. Put your coat on, he'd say, you're finished. And then they had another bloke there. He'd sack them too, left, right and centre. And then there was another big bloke. He was about 7 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a funny big bloke. Get your bloody coat on, he'd say, and don't come back, and you know. And they, of course, they used to sack him left, right, and centre, and in them days, for not doing their work.
Okay. Can we get back to, so you were at Waitemata for, do you know how long you were there for, roughly?
Oh, I suppose we're there off and on for couple of years.
Yeah. Did you go back to Bothell on the weekends, or you just lived?
Oh, we used to come home every Friday night and go back Sundays.
Okay. So during that period, you talked earlier on about your father getting some horses. Tell us a bit about that. Why was he interested in horses? Did he grow up racing horses? Or?
Well, he used to, in them days, I can remember him saying to my mother when we lived in Hobart for that short period, he'd say to Mum, I'm going out to the races today, and he'd take 5 shillings. And sometimes he'd come home with a pound or two, and other times he'd come home with nothing. So he was always wrapped up in horses, and my brother was a mad gambler too, but it didn't worry me. I never was a punter. I rode horses and all that sort of thing, but as far as the gambling side of it, didn't worry me. But my father was, as I said, he loved the horses, but there was no money in him. He just done it for the love of it, and of course everyone else had a racehorse, and it was a big thing in them days. If you had a racehorse and a motor car, you were
well off.
Yeah.
There was a training track at Bothell.
There was a racetrack there. They used to have the races every year, every Easter Monday.
Yep.
Was the races, and they had a big meeting there. There was a lot of people. They'd come from everywhere, including Black Bobs, everywhere.
Yep. Now, was your father a good trainer? I mean, did he get any winners?
Well, he used to train them only locally, his own horses and that, because the reason they were successful in lots of cases were We never done, only run them on the track, you know. He trained them up the hills and trained them getting rabbits and carrying rabbits on them.
Were you a good rider?
Oh, yes, I could ride as good as anyone ever rode a horse in them days around there.
Yeah? Did you ever ride in any races?
Yeah, I rode at Oaklands and different Bothwell my father never wanted me to, you know, but...
Did you win any races?
Yeah, we went to Oaklands one day, I remember, and my mother wanted to put him in a 6 furlong race, and he won it. But I didn't ride him. Another chap rode him. And anyway, then the next race was a mile race, and my mother said, "Oh, we'll put him in what they call the cup." And my father said, "No, I'm not putting him in there." He said, "I'm not paying the nomination fee, it's too dear, and he won't win it, it's too far. He won't run a mile, he'll only run 6 furlongs.
So he didn't go in it?
My mother was I was leading him around, and he put his foot on the bridle, and went down to get his foot from under the bridle, and there was a pound note there. So I said to Mum, there's a pound note. And she said, "Oh, well, will you ride him?" And my father walked away. He wouldn't have nothing to do with it. So anyway, we did. And of course, he was a beautiful big horse. And he was that far in front when you jumped from the barrier. He had the old string barriers in them days.
Yep.
Used to line up to a piece of string.
And
then you'd wait until he'd gallop into, you know, and you'd get a good start and away you'd go.
Yep.
And so those were the...
He won. Did he win?
Yeah. And of course, it was a different story then.
What was the horse's name, sorry?
Dark Saint.
Dark Saint, right. So what happened then? Your father took all the credit, did he?
Oh, yeah, he got the credit of being the trainer. And those were... But it was a funny old... I can remember a bloke by the name of Teddy Connolly. He was a good jockey too, Teddy. And he taught me how to ride, really, to a point. Him and another chap by the name of Tassie Woods. We went to a place called Hamilton, and we took the Dark Saint.
Yeah.
I drove him over in the truck. I remember it as well as anything. I drove the truck and took him over. And Teddy Connolly was to ride him, and I, Lenny Manson, he had the local pub, another pub around the corner, and so he had a horse, and of course it never ever won a race. And anyway, Teddy's was a real gambler, Teddy Connolly. So anyway, Lenny Manson said, "Now I want you to pull Dark Saint and ride my, so as my horse can win."
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, we didn't know the story till after. So anyway, of course, Teddy rode him, and half a furlong, in front. He couldn't yet fall over to lose it. And Teddy fell off him a stride from the post. And Lenny Manson's all started the 25-1. And Teddy Connolly put his money on the horse, because he got more out of that than what he would have done for win and ride.
Ah, right, okay. So he deliberately fell off the horse.
He deliberately fell off him at Hamilton. I'll never forget it.
Oh, my, geez, the owner must have been a bit cranky.
Well, when we went home, we went to the hotel, and Teddy he'd come from Hobart up. He was stopping there.
Yeah.
And so he locked himself in the bedroom. He wouldn't come down because he knew the old man was there. He was too frightened to come down. But he was, that's the sort of thing Teddy would do, you know, to get a dollar and then to get a quid in them days.
Yeah. What, race fixing?
Mm.
Can you remember any other characters in the racing industry in those days?
Oh, there was a lot of characters. There was the a bloke in Bothwell. He was the inspector there, and he had two horses, and his son used to ride. And they used to carry the lead bag in them days, you know. And his old man would go around and his son would throw the lead bags off. And then his old man would carry him into the enclosure, so as when he weighed in, he wouldn't have him on. And, there were some funny old stories in them days, with, you know, what they done for a few dollars, as the saying is.
Now, your father had an unfortunate accident at one stage and died on the track. Now, what age were you when that happened?
I was, I hadn't long been married. I was 19 then.
19. Well, can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, we went to a place called Richmond, which is it's one of the oldest country towns in Tasmania.
Yeah.
And they had a race meeting there. And, he was a member of the ACT, they called it ACT meetings in them days. He was a member of the racing committee then. And,
at Richmond?
Yeah, all meetings all around, you know.
Yeah.
So him and an old friend of his, they walked over and got under the rails near the winning post and stood there. Anyway, of course, to watch the horse win. So there was a horse left about a furlong behind, and he didn't see it, because when all the horses went past the post, he stepped under the running rail, and of course this horse hit him.
Fair square.
Killed him.
And where were you at the time?
I was a few yards away from the ambulance, and when I looked around, they were putting him in the ambulance, when I got to the ambulance, it was old Brusher Branch, we called him. He said, "It's your father." And because when I opened the ambulance door, and the ambulance driver said, "Are you too late? Are you his son?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, it's too late. He just killed him." He said, "Straight out, hit him straight in the head and killed him."
Oh.
Of course, the horse was travelling 60 k's an hour and hit him with a chest, see.
And can you remember what you thought at that time? Or how? Obviously, well, it was a horrible thing to happen.
I drove the family over in an old Essex Super 6 we had. And I had to drive, and my old grandfather was then, he was there, and my mother, and of course, and Betty, the only sister alive now, and she was there, and my brother was up in the Lake Country at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove him back to Bothwell, and of course I had to go to Hobart, and I had to go to the morgue and identify him, and any part anything that we wanted the police. But he had a. I was with him when he put a pound on the horse at one, with a bloke called the local bookmaker in Hobart.
Yeah.
And of course we went to, when I went to the police station in Hobart to get, I said about the ticket and everything, and they said, "Oh, there's no ticket in his pocket, but someone had taken the ticket." And,
oh no, from a dead man.
Yeah, someone had taken the ticket. And
well, that must have had a dramatic effect on your family, with your father, income. What did you do? What did your mother do?
Well, we went back to Bothwell, and my mother, and of course there was no work or nothing that my mother could do her and my sister moved on to New Norfolk, and Mum went cooking in a local hotel down there. and lived there.
In New Norfolk.
Mm. And as I said, I was living in Bothwell, and she went there and worked and...
With your sister?
With my sister for years, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it was a hard time and...
Do you remember the funeral?
Yes.
Many people turn up?
Oh, yeah, big funeral. Yeah.
Where was it?
At Bothwell.
So I forget his name. What was his name again?
George Horn.
George Horn, no.
Yes, he had a big funeral. There was a lot of people.
Who spoke at the funeral? Can you remember?
I don't think there was anyone they were Lenny Manson. They were great friends.
Yeah.
He spoke there, and there was a lot of others at the back at the hotel where they had a cup of tea and a sandwich and what have you back in the local.
Yep.
Dining room and that, and but he was well liked, and there was a lot of people. One of the biggest funerals in Bothwell here.
Okay, well, let's go back to something a bit more happy. You said you were married by that stage, so who was your wife? When did you first meet her? And
well,
I
met her in, of course, when I used to go to the hotel, and I was a great friend of Joan Connolly's son, Brian Connolly. He was a going to St Virgil's College, and so we used to go to and come home for weekends and that sort of thing, and so. And we knocked around us together, sort of thing. And so I knew Faye in that time. And of course, we went out together and to dances. And
So you met her when you were 14 or 15?
Yes. And then continued on to there right on until I got married.
So what? What sort of dances did you go to, and where did they hold them, and did they have live bands?
Well, we'd go to the local to Bothwell, and of course they had the old piano.
Yep.
There was a woman played the piano. She played there, and my father played the piano pretty well.
Did he?
And so he would play, and different ones would come in and play for a dance and things like that, and then of course. Hamilton used to have dances, and we'd go there, and there was a dance hall down at a place called Apsley, that's on the way to other side of Bothwell, going towards Hobart.
Yeah.
And there was a few country places had dances. You were talking about the Steps. There was an old dance hall at the Steps that's still there to this day.
So how often would you go to these dances?
Oh, just about every Friday night.
Friday nights, were they?
Mm. Yeah, Friday night you could go to the dance if you had, if you had 10 shillings in your pocket, you could have a ball.
What would you spend the money on?
Well, it cost you, I think it was a shilling or whatever it was to get in, to go to the dance, and you'd take, the girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
And, a lot of young blokes would go and buy a bottle of wine, and they could buy a bottle of wine for 1 and 6, and so they'd have a few sherbets and different ones that it didn't bother me, that sort of thing. And I just liked to go to a dance and just enjoy the night, and it was a. And then perhaps we'd might go to Hamilton to a dance, or just depending on, because it was hard on trying to get petrol in them days.
Okay, we might just wrap it up at the moment, and we'll come back to your wedding and meeting Faye very shortly. Just hang on a sec.